Okay, now you can hear me. Looks like it's 4:30, so I'd like to call the meeting to order. Stephanie, can you do the roll call, please?
Astrid Bergson. Eileen Danavy. Bill Gleason. Ernie Gullerud. Dolores Henry.
Here.
Mike McClellan. Tom Moore. Here. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Deborah Townsend.
Here.
Thank you. It looks like we have a quorum. Now we have citizen input. So at this time, anybody from public can come forward and make a comment if you choose. Just state your name and if you belong to an agency, what the agency is, please.
It isn't on. There it is. Okay. With Astrid Bergson as chair of the Community Justice Task Force, because as I was sitting and listening to the presentation by people from New York City, Chicago, and Lincoln, Nebraska, I realized this concept could come into play as we work through the jail issue and the intersection of the jail issue and mental health. And one of the ways that I see it potentially playing itself out is we know we get X amount of money from public safety and we get Y amount of money from property taxes related to mental health. And what a perfect opportunity for us to try a new process to engage the community to think about how that money ought to be spent, since we are discussing whether we need a new jail, expanded jail, renovated jail. The issues of mental health have come up in all of our conversations, and especially at the Community Justice Task Force, and the need for more money for mental health aspects within our community. So I bring this to your attention. I'm happy to share the documents with any or all of you if you have an interest in learning more about it. I can send you forward the email that I sent to Astrid that has all of the different websites for the different cities across the United States that are using this. I even found some scholastic papers on this process. And one of the very important parts of it has to do with increasing citizen participation, because citizens really feel that they have a say on how something turns out. They get to discuss and select the items that are going to be voted on, and then they get to vote on those items in relationship to how money gets spent. This is the ballot that's used in Ward 49 in Chicago. That's Alderman Joe Monroe, and he was one of the panelists. And this is the documentation of how it's done in New York City. And this documentation comes from the Community Development Project at the Urban Justice Center. So there's wonderful documentation, and I do hope that this group will put this on their agenda to discuss as a possible way of setting up the manner in which money is dispersed for mental health. Thank you.
Thank you, Patsy. Would it be possible to send like a copy of everything to Peter, and then he can disseminate it to the rest of the board. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there any more citizen participation? Okay. Then moving on. Is there any CCDDB information, Peter?
The Developmental Disability Board met this morning and went through the applications. I think what is left to do for this board will be to think about how the $570,000 that we allocate for developmental disabilities, how that should be used and how best we can integrate our planning with the Developmental Disability Board. So we're going to be, I plan on having a meeting with the presidents of the boards to discuss that, and then that will be incorporated in the May decision memo.
Thank you. At this time, we need to approve the minutes from our March 20th board meeting. So I need a motion and a second to do that.
Second.
Okay, Dr. Moore moved and Island second. So is there any discussion or corrections that need to be made to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, looks like our minutes are approved. The next item is the president's comments. I just wanted to say that a lot of you may or may not know that the Champaign County Anti-Stigma Alliance, of which we are a partner, co-sponsored a film in the Roger Ebert Film Fest that we had last week. The name of the film was In the Family. It was shown on a Thursday, and it was written, directed, and starred by a young man by the name of Patrick Wang, and it was just an extraordinary movie. I see we have some copies of the movie fest if you wanted to read about that movie, but it really, really dealt with this whole issue of stigma, and it just really adds to the message that we're trying to address in this community. So we were just so thankful that Roger and his organization was willing to show that here in this community. Also during the film fest, our own Dr. Deborah Townsend moderated one of the academic panel discussions at the union. And it was called Challenging Stigma Through the Arts. And she did just a terrific job. And we'd like to applaud her for representing us so well. And I don't know how many other people on the board went to the movies, but Julie and I went to quite a few. And it was just really a great moment, a sad moment, you know, since Roger was like family to everybody who's gone to the movies for the last 15 years, like me and Peter. But on the other hand, maybe at this time we could do a moment of silence just to honor Roger being from Urbana and doing so much through the media and the movies to help just address issues all across this country and probably in other countries also. So how about a moment of silence for Roger? Okay, thank you. And they did assure us, his wife Chaz and all of the other people who support this endeavor, that we will continue to have the festival here in Champaign-Urbana. So enough said about that. Now we'll have Peter do his comments.
Mine will be brief. I would also like to suggest that people, one of the other films that was in the festival was a film called Not Yet Begun to Fight, which was about veterans who had PTSD and traumatic brain injuries and other wounds from war. It was a very good film, and it also was an anti-stigma. I would describe it as an anti-stigma film, And I would encourage you to see that film if you haven't. Actually, over the years, we've talked about that Roger tended to select films that dealt with the stigma issues that we are concerned with. And, you know, so he was, as you said, thank you for the moment of silence, because that was a wonderful thing. The other thing I wanted to, we have a large agenda tonight, but I wanted to share with you that the U.S. District Court of the Northern District of Illinois dismissed the lawsuit against the McHenry County Mental Health Board. And this was a lawsuit brought on by a provider concerning the Mental Health Board challenging billing and billing irregularities. The suit was dismissed with prejudice. Two counts were dismissed with prejudice, but I think that's over. I shared copies of that with everybody if you want to see it. I can tell you that we, you know, in terms of the from the board's perspective, that our contracts address the same issues, and we're going to review our boilerplates to make sure that we have everything covered so that the board and the county are clear related to liabilities that could come up. That's really all I have.
Thank you, Peter. At this time, we'll have staff reports from Tracy Parsons, Lynn Canfield, and Mr. Driscoll, Mark Driscoll, if you want to add anything to any of your reports, or if any board members have questions or comments about any of those reports which are in our packet. Now's the time to let us know.
I think the program summaries pretty much covered all for me and Lynn, and then I believe Mr. Parsons has included staff reports.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to speak to any particular issue? Okay, thanks. Now we have board-to-board reports. Do any board members have any reports?
I mean, my decided to see what their cuisine is like. Oh, I see. Enjoying what yours was.
You know your favorite.
It's been a while, but it's a tremendous amount of change in the Community Elements program when I was first liaison, and I'm eager to learn more about it. So I guess I'll have to go with that. You were there, too.
Great. Eileen, would you like to share, since you are on that as a liaison also?
Give me. Oh, I have something to add. It's fine.
Okay, thank you. Deb?
Yes, I'd like to say something about the CAC, the children's.
It was already on.
The Children's Advocacy Center, can you hear me?
I don't think it's on.
It's not on.
Now it is.
Mike Williams has been the director of the CAC for 7 years, 8 years? 12, oh, a long time. And he has developed it from a very tiny little program to something that's really going very, very well and adding a great deal to the needs of this community. Mike is leaving. Joe Gordon has stolen him to come in. Work with him, I think, to run his office. Is that right? And we will miss you, but we know you're in good hands. So thank you for all your hard work.
Is there any other comment? I had an opportunity to go for the first time to visit the Community Choices, since I'm their liaison, and it was quite a nice experience, and I'm looking forward to learning more about, you know, what their mission is and what their hopes and dreams are for the clients that they represent in this community. Mike, we're just to the point of talking about board-to-board comments. Did you have anything that you would like to share? Okay. Anything else from that board-to-board? Julian? Yes.
I'm still learning the procedure here. So I had I did visit. They didn't feed me, but I visited the Access Project, spoke with Tracy and Elizabeth, and got a pretty good overview of what they're doing, which is massive, as you probably all know better than I do. And I'm just familiarizing myself with it. And I will, in fact, meet with their, what do you call it, coordinating committee? Is that right?
Coordinating council.
I'll meet with them tomorrow.
Good.
So I'll give you a report about that.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll make sure there's food next time.
I'm surprised they didn't have food. They normally do have dinner.
Yeah, it wasn't a regular meal.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, if not, now we get to agency information. So do we have any people who would like to share anything about their particular agency? Bruce, did you?
Not really. we're still out money from the state. We're a little over $1 million, and there doesn't seem to be a plan other than discussions about pension that seems to be on more people's minds. But it's really a critical issue with a lot of providers in the state, and especially when you're trying to plan for the Medicaid expansion when you can't get ahead with when you're behind. So it's causing, and will cause a real ripple effect once the enrollments come in and we start to begin to identify who's on these services in January. I don't think the system will be wrapped up enough to be able to deliver.
Well, you know, hold on to your seat, Bruce. We're in for a long experience, I guess. Okay, anybody else from the agency? Darlene?
I just wanted to mention that in addition to the court diversion services that we offer primarily through this board, we also are involved with developmental disabilities through our PASS agency, which is not funded locally by the county but funded by the state. And I wanted to let you know that our case managers are seeing across the service area that we cover, which is the three-county area, and then across the state, which is covered by the entire PASS agency system, a significant distress level, I guess is how I would put it. The state is under mandate from several court orders, which I think you've discussed in this group or mentioned in this group. Peter's mentioned a couple of times, to remove people from state institution or from large ICFDD facilities into more community-based orientation options and smaller living units like SILAs. And the clients are being selected on a schedule, which is fairly rapid to meet this court requirement. And in addition, there are some other issues with potential wards from DCFS that are being transitioned into DD services instead of under DCFS services. There's several different things going on at the same time. But what that's meaning is that the population in Champaign County and the surrounding counties is growing with people that are in the community and needing community-based services. And the state's issues, which Bruce was mentioning for the substance abuse providers, and I know you're aware for mental health providers, is also true for developmental disabilities providers. And there are not a lot of beds available that are vacant around the state in which to move these people into more community settings. And there are very few community services like day training, other kinds of things that are able to gear up to handle the additional clients that are coming their way, and the additional supports that would be necessary for people that are used to having 24/7 care and now in a community setting. So in addition to the fact that there's not a lot of services out there, the state, of course, because of its funding difficulty, is not, you know, trying to madly figure out how they're going to pay for this, trying to encourage providers to increase capacity. They're beginning to get pushback from the providers saying you're not paying us on a timely basis now, so we're not increasing our slots, which is slowing down the referral process. And there's people, really the concern is the people that are receiving services getting stuck in the middle. They're, you know, they can't get services here, and they're getting told they can't get services here, and they're just, it's kind of, they're in the, always in this in-between place. I just wanted to make you aware of it. I don't know if there's anything this board can necessarily do about it, but the developmental disability side doesn't get talked about as much in this forum, so I just wanted to make you aware of that and let you know what was going on there.
Thank you.
Could you come up and speak into the microphone? While you're coming up, Darlene, thank you for that description of the capacity issue. And just in case you didn't know it, we sent a letter to Tony Records related to the capacity problem and the lack of any incentives for providers to develop additional capacity. So.
And actually, that's all I was going to ask, is if you got any kind of response from that letter. I know that you did that last month.
No.
Okay. Well, that was worth the walk. Thank you.
Do we have any other agencies who would like to make a comment? You have nothing, Sheila? Or do you have something?
Actually, it's this question there. If this is a time where maybe when you're going to speak to the art show.
Oh. Do you want to speak to the art show?
As good a time as any.
On Saturday, and I know I just noticed that Barb wasn't here, mm-hmm. and so this is kind of a shout out to her and Vicki for the great work that they did to put the art show together this year. We hosted it at Community Elements on the first floor, and there were 12 artists, which was wonderful because the tent for the food was slightly moved, and so we had a steady stream of people mm-hmm. between the art. The movies and the art show, and so just a great job again, Barb and Vicki did, and it was wonderful to see all the artwork, and it just seemed like it got better and better every year, and so
they sold a lot of product, and we got some feedback from people outside of this community who were looking forward to that because they'd seen it last year too, so that was a real surprise.
That was really nice, and just a footnote. For those of you who don't know, that Community Elements, for the past several years of Ebert Fest, have done a parking lot fundraiser, which raises money for charity care to cover the costs, especially of psychiatry on a sliding scale for people in the community. And that parking lot fundraiser just takes place for Ebert Fest, and we raised $8,800. So it's wonderful.
That's great news. Thank you, Sheila. Marquitas, do you have anything to share? Okay. Anyone else? Okay. We'll move on. Now we have to accept our financial claims report for this month. So I need a motion and a second to do that. Okay. Deb Townsend moved. Mike, second. Does anyone have any comments or any questions about the financial report? Nancy is here, so I'm sure she'll be able to answer any of our questions. Okay, hearing nothing, then all in favor of accepting this report? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same. Okay, then it looks like we accepted it. Thank you. Now, this is the moment you've all been waiting for, the new business, which is the 2014 application program summaries. And at this point, I'll turn the meeting over to Peter, and we'll go forward with agenda item A under new business.
Thank you. I think the first thing I want to say is I want to thank all of the applicants and the providers that we've worked with over the years, as well as any new ones that applied this year for the work that they did on their applications. We know that it takes a lot of effort. As you know, our board members have access online to the applications as they come in. In addition, we do the summaries. this is our opportunity for the board to ask questions directly to applicants if they have questions about the different programs. So what I thought we would do is very quickly go through these, and we'll just see if the board has any particular questions that they want to ask it as we go through. No, no. This is basically we're reviewing the applications. There are no recommendations. The final decisions about funding will be made at the next meeting in May. Right. Right. So, you know, of course, what is said tonight has an impact on those kinds of things.
When do we receive staff
information? It would be a week before the next meeting. You're part of the executive committee, so you'll be involved in helping formulate those. So.
Yes.
And the four proposals that are on file in your office, if you've got any questions. Yes. Yes. Yeah, they're online, and also if you want hard copies, we can get you hard copies, whatever you want. We also have gotten some comments from some of the applicants concerning the summaries that have been completed. We will have those available as part of the May packet.
Okay. Can we get little packets done as how they use the online?
We will provide technical assistance, yes, anytime. All right, okay. Mark and Lynn will guide you through that. Okay, well, let's get started. The first, we're just going to start at the front, the Center for Women in Transition, A Woman's Place. And before I describe this very briefly, I want to mention that we have a new executive director of this agency, Nancy Hyatt. Is Nancy there? Yeah, there she is. Could you raise your hand? Yeah, okay, there she is. Well, stand up. Nancy's, I don't know exactly when you took over the agency, but she comes from McHenry County, so she has experience working with our sister mental health board in McHenry County. So, welcome.
February 20th.
Okay. It's been a while, so.
Two whole months.
Okay. Well, welcome to our community. We're glad you're here. This is a woman's place. And this is for a program that we funded for a long time, and it has to do with victims of domestic abuse. And it is a counseling program that is offered by the program. Were there any questions from the board concerning this program? As we said, it's a long-standing program, so there may not be questions. We know what you do. Okay, I'm going to move on then to the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center. We've already talked a little bit about that. This, of course, is a program that allows a setting for safe interviews with kids who are victims of Category 1 child abuse. Do they still call it Category 1? Or the serious child abuse situations. And, of course, Mike, as we said, Mike Williams is leaving the program. And this is something we have funded for a long time also. It's also a county program. This is part of county government also. Okay, community choices. We have three applications from community choices. Dolores, you commented on them. They serve people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They have submitted their applications to both boards. We have Jennifer Knapp and Linda Tortorelli are here. The first one is customized employment, and this is one of the programs that deals with finding creative employment opportunities for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Were there any questions from the board? Yes.
I'm just unclear about the relationship between funding from Mental Health Board and funding from Developmental Disabilities Board and how that works. And this is as good a moment to ask that question.
Sure.
As an example here.
Good question.
The Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board have an intergovernmental agreement that defines their relationship. And the reason for that is that both boards have a responsibility for developmental disabilities. The fact that we passed the referendum in 2004 did not absolve the Mental Health Board of responsibilities that they have for developmental disabilities. So as part of that, we identified a starting point at when the Developmental Disability Board was created, and basically have said we will earmark certain funds that change based on what the levy is. This year, that's roughly $570,000 of the Mental Health Board's money that is earmarked for developmental disabilities. And so we basically review all of the applications for developmental disabilities and then work with the Developmental Disability Board to decide where the money should come from. But basically this 570 that we have from the Mental Health Board has to be used for programs that provide services for people with developmental disabilities.
So, I guess what I want to know is, when I'm looking at this, will I know what this funding is coming from or what funding is requested of the Developmental Disabilities Board as well? Or is this just, I'll just know what funding's coming from this board?
Basically, many of the agencies apply to both boards, and we kind of look at them, applications that come to one board come to both, but these, some of these we funded last year under this board. But for the most part, anything that is in here that is related to developmental disabilities would be tied to that $570,000.
Okay.
Question.
I'm sorry. Astrid. Oh, my gosh. Thank you very much. I forgot to – that was actually something I was going to talk about during my remarks, and I forgot to do it. We shared with you there was a lawsuit in Oregon that relates to sheltered workshops primarily, and the governor of Oregon essentially issued an executive order. And basically the whole issue of employment is going to – there's going to be change. We're going to see change – come. I think what's happening in Oregon is probably, we're looking at a couple years, it's going to happen here. It's going to be a national change, would be my prediction. That's one of the reasons that I think both boards are interested in looking at applications that relate to employment. And as you can see, community choices, this is one of the areas in addition to looking at supporting families and also dealing with residential. Employment is one of the large areas that they're interested in. So I think that generally you're going to see a move away from sheltered workshops to competitive employment and customized employment of different kinds.
And just to give a little explanation, my name is Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices. I'm the executive director. And our organization is pretty unique in that we're actually a cooperative of families. So individuals with developmental disabilities and their families partner together. So one of the things kind of going off of what Darlene said earlier about the lack of capacity is by having families partner together, we can actually multiply the capacity that's there because families put in their time and resources and energy. And so that's one of the things. The program that you funded last year was called Self-Determination Support, and that is our social and family support pieces of the cooperative. And then we have applied this year to both boards for employment as well as innovative housing options. So just want to let you know that that's one of the ways that we can help provide an answer to some of the challenges is by helping encourage families to get involved and help support each other.
Customized employment because of what? What makes it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, and you didn't fund it last year, so it makes sense that you wouldn't know. So customized employment is just a different approach to employment. So what it is that we start with something called discovery, which is where you get to know the person and figure out what it is that they're interested in, and then go on tours of businesses so they can get some familiarity. And the idea is that instead of just looking in the one ads and finding jobs that are available, you actually customize a job. So you might take some pieces of different kinds of jobs at an employer. So, for example, there's a person that's working at a pet grooming place, and she wasn't able to do all of the jobs, but she was able to wash dogs. And so we were able to customize a job for her that was just about washing the dogs, and she didn't have to do the cashier kind of things that go along with it, that would have gone along with the job. So it's really being able to find something that works for the person to maximize their abilities and minimize their disabilities.
So do you work with employers as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we only do. Yeah, we don't provide jobs ourselves. Yeah, we help people find jobs. Yeah.
But it's not simply a job counseling.
Correct.
Right. And then there's the ongoing job coaching as well. And what's unique is typically under a contract with DRS, it expires after, 180 days, 90 days, and this person has to be self-sufficient in that job. In this model, that you can have ongoing job coaching as long as you need it your entire life. And like my son works at Best Buy 3 days a week, just 2 hours each time. He's been there 2.5 years. But that, that ongoing support allows him to maintain that job at a level that DRS wouldn't allow him to continue to work because it's below what they consider, their threshold for work.
Okay. The other program is community living, which is also another creative approach to a independent living situation. Does anybody have any questions about that one? And on page 13, there was an error. It says community living on that one as the program, and this is actually self-determination and support. So if you would cross out community living and write in self-determination and support. Okay.
Self-determination support.
Yeah. Self-determination support. And I remind you, these are all marked drafts, so we are forgiven for errors like this. It is a draft. Any questions about this? Okay. Thank you very much. We go to community elements, I believe Sheila is here, and Bruce. I saw Bruce earlier. The first one is the criminal justice and problem solving courts, and this is a contract that currently involves dealing with people that are involved that have mental health issues that are involved in the criminal justice system. At this point, this application sort of is on the table. I mean, by that I mean we're working with providers to tailor this to more closely meet the needs of people that are in the criminal justice system. Excuse me. And I would also like to point out that we've actually had a meeting with providers that included the sheriff, the state's attorney, I think, was there too, or I can't remember. Francis Nelson was there also. Thank you very much.
CHC.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Dolores was there.
And Murray.
Right. And Bruce. Basically, we tried to get everybody that's involved with this issue and to talk about what kinds of changes could we make between now and the end of the year in the contracts that we currently have online. And actually, some of these agencies have already made some changes. I can tell you that Community Elements, for example, this particular program, they've actually got someone that's assigned to be in the jail and that they're doing groups in the jail. So that's happening already. So what we will be doing during contract negotiation, we will have the sheriff involved in that process, and we will be looking at revising the program plan to make sure that it meets the needs of all the people. Did anybody have it? Yes.
I have a question about this.
I'm almost embarrassed to ask. I feel as though I ought to know the answer, but I don't. Would somebody very briefly tell me what moral recognition therapy is? I've come across that term recently several times, but I don't know what it means.
Okay, 17.
Yeah.
Sue.
It's a program, a cognitive behavior therapy program tailored initially for people in corrections. It can be adapted to other prisons that people have, but it's been very effective with the criminal justice population. We had four people trained at our agency in it, and the sheriff's department brought training here in the community, so several of the workers at the jail have been trained in it. We have two staff implementing it. We have a group at the agency as a transition group from women that are in the jail that are getting the MRT group in jail, and we just started the MRT group for males in the jail. It is an evidence-based model, so it's got some very good results. We're hopeful.
Mm-hmm. That's the group that has already, they've already moved it into the to the jail setting so that those groups are happening now.
And the goal is to continue when they get out, when they transition, to keep till they complete the program. It's a 16-week program. Mm-hmm.
What is the meaning of the word recognition in this context?
I didn't go to the training, and I don't quite understand recognition, okay. But they, so I'm going to have to say, I'm sorry, I don't know. Sheila, do you know? Sorry.
I too have encountered this before and had some sort of explanation which didn't take. I think it's a made up word, and I think we would be better off in all social services and mental health and everything else to do away with made up words and make it more plain. But I can't tell you now what I think recognition is.
We should have gone to the training.
We looked it up. We couldn't find it.
I will ask Becky Griffith and Ed Hawks. They're the ones that are implementing it.
Mm-hmm.
Can email everybody.
Well, it's the name of a program, but it might not have a definition.
Mm-hmm. I think that what Sue said first, it is cognitive behavior therapy that's tailored to people that are involved with the justice system, and is probably the best answer. Okay.
Peter?
Yes.
I had a question, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
I was curious to know what kind of relationship, this ties back to the access measures, and there's, a reference made to the Department of Corrections, and I was wondering if there's any formal relationship between this program and DOC, because there appears to be a more quicker contact time frame associated with DOC referrals as opposed to just criminal justice. There is a reference in the application to Department of Corrections referrals are contacted within 48 hours of their release. The overall measure is for criminal justice clients, an effort being made to engage the client within 5 days. So there's 5 days for just criminal justice clients, but there's a more, a sooner period of time with Department of Corrections. So which leads me to the question, what kind of relationship do you have with the Department of Corrections for this program, or do you?
I can answer briefly, and then Sue may want to add. The Department of Corrections, of course, refers folks that have gone from our local jail to Department of Corrections and then coming back who have behavioral health issues. And so it still is a way that we can provide that level of services to reduce recidivism for those people coming back to the community after staying in the Department of Corrections. And so we know that they're Champaign County residents and that this same practice and service assists them. As far as a formal agreement with them, they do not, I think this year is the first year actually their funding was cut, so there's no formal agreement as far as like paying for services as we move forward. Prior to this, they paid for some supportive counseling and therapy. There is no formal relationship other than the requirement for us to follow up and relink, refer, and support people returning to the county.
We have seen an increase in the number of mentally ill clients from DOC coming into Time Center, which you and I've talked about in the past, and we've been able this year to get them in much more quickly for a mental health assignment. We've had two interns working with us, and we've been able to screen them more quickly, and that's been very helpful for what that's worth.
Sue, could you, I don't expect you to have an answer today, but could you email me a breakout for the criminal justice program? How many of the folks you're working with are DOC folks as opposed to just clients coming out of the jail?
Any other questions about this program? Okay, the next Community Elements program is the Crisis Access Benefit and Engagement Program. And this is really about linking people with primarily Medicaid, and with the Medicaid expansion that's coming up in 2014, obviously that's going to be an important piece. Were there any questions about this particular one? Yes. Mike, your turn.
In the third paragraph, you talk about the conflicting information that was provided regarding the two new crisis clinicians to be added. Has that been resolved, those conflicts? And also, at the bottom it says, the difference between the personnel form and the budget narrative does need clarification. And my question is, has one been resolved? Has the other been done?
The answer is no. Those would be things that we will be doing during the contract negotiation if you choose to fund them. But we don't make corrections at this point until we make the funding decisions.
Well, I would like to know more about the two new clinicians before I evaluate it.
I think Peter has made reference to the fact that a number of the agencies have been meeting with both the sheriff and, in our case, the state's attorney, the city of Champaign, the city of Urbana, and the University of Illinois police departments. And I've had lots of discussions about what the needs are and what we could do to provide more prevention in terms of getting out into the community before someone is taken to the emergency department or to jail, that option for prevention happen before we get to that stage. And so many of you may know that prior to at least this last 5 years and now more of cuts that we received, most of our crisis work is done now only in the EDs. Almost exclusively, and that's what the state pays for. So the crisis reimbursement for Medicaid is simply just for the purpose of determining whether someone needs to be hospitalized or not. This is our way of trying to respond to the needs, which is part of our mission, but to also respond to what we're hearing from the police department about the need to, again, try to have additional capacity within our crisis team to do more of a community response, with the idea in mind that if we are able to refer and link people earlier, they won't actually get to the jail or the ED.
Yeah.
And so we have not asked the 708 board for the total that we need for crisis clinicians, for example. We chose two because we know that the city of Urbana, city of Champaign, and the sheriff are the three primary areas. And looking at the CIT data, that's the crisis intervention training data, which indicates sort of the number of people who are being screened for mental health issues by our officers, and it tends to run on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so we're looking at trying to provide coverage to all three of those departments at the times that they need that. And so We've asked for the two FTEs. And the complicating factor is that in some cases, we may be able to bill Medicaid. And so when we were responding to this, in responding to this question, you'll notice that we don't really know how much Medicaid we can generate because that is not the target population for Medicaid for crisis workers. And so we're going to do our best to try to generate Medicaid dollars because that's the only way that we can increase capacity is by finding resources even within the delivery of the service. But this service doesn't meet the criteria for the Department of Mental Health crisis intervention. So we want to be able to do both, but we know we will be able to bill a little, but not as much. So that's why that was a little bit more complex. And at the end of the year, what we're hoping is to be able to demonstrate to the Mental Health Board how much, which we should be very easily able to do, and then those dollars would go back into paying. So we wouldn't expect the 708 Board to cover the cost if we're able to raise more than 10% through Medicaid reimbursement.
Thank you, Sheila.
Any other questions about this one?
Pete, I've got a question, actually two. You mentioned the clinicians, community response, and I think we've talked about this, but what you're talking about is the clinicians responding to the community resource center that's presence is now operating as opposed to being out in the field and responding to, like, a call to someone's home. Is that correct?
I think that's in development still. So when we completed these applications, we responded to the police department not knowing what the community resource center would be able to do. And the CIT officers, the state's attorney, and others have visited, but there's a special meeting coming up, I believe, on May 10th, and they'll be visiting the CRC to be able to determine what scenarios they can manage there. The only scenarios that we saw that if it was possible to deliver, I'll back up just a little bit. If the police department is able to bring people to the CRC, that frees up the police officers to go back into the field. And the community resource location would be a nice place because the hospital also has security. So that's why they are talking about it like that. But we want to learn a little bit more about the security at CRC and what kind of scenarios they can experience there. There was a little bit of a discussion, too, about an increase in domestic violence in the Champaign area, and so there was some thoughts that we may intervene. It's a mental health issue in some cases. They may call us to the scene because they can't transport the entire family in some situations into the CRC. So at the time of writing, and now we're seeing that there might be more of an interest from the law enforcement and first responders to come to a central location that's safe. And so I think Mark is exactly right. There's starting to be a movement towards having if funded, these particular positions located there might provide a more holistic service as well because they're going to have some primary care, et cetera.
And then I've got one other question related to the CIT. The training, is that provided by the coordinator? How the crisis coordinator, does that person do the CIT training? How is the CIT training done?
The CIT training is done at the Police Institute now, and it does involve some of our staff, our crisis team, but it also involves, like, NAMI and the families. Along with other folks. I think the Pavilion has some services there. I know Bruce Barnard does some of the training as well. So they actually have a very good variety of people providing that training directly to the police officers. And I think the last count, I know Julian was there, I think there was like 32 officers currently trained in CIT, which was wonderful.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes. Bill.
The one thing, I guess I'm looking for a little help here, and I'm not picking on Sheila at all, but I've been kind of tracking the number of people served in each one of these programs, And I want to make sure I'm reading this right, because this one, the one we just talked about, had 214 people basically served. We'd be back there on page 20 in the second to last paragraph. And the program spends $800,000. So am I correct in saying that we spend $800,000 on 214 people?
If I may, Bill.
That's where I'm looking at help.
Yeah, the number that is reported there is specific to the number of clients that were assisted with benefit applications. It's not a reflection of the number of contacts they've had through the crisis program. That's actually a different statistic, or the number of intakes or screenings that are done through the access program.
And one other clarification. This $799,000 is actually what our program costs, and of that, we're just asking for $229,000.
Right.
So only a portion of it.
We don't fund the whole program. We fund a portion of the program.
Bruce has a clarification here.
So in addition to those numbers you were talking about, there were 4,144 crisis screening contacts, and the Access Department completed 1,299 screenings.
That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Any other questions about this? The next one is the Early Childhood and Mental Health and Development Program. And this is essentially a program for very young children, and it includes three different programs, Healthy Families, Healthy Young Families, and Prevention. And our money, this is the total program is about $826,000, of which our share is $115,000, and that is essentially match, if I remember correctly. The ounce of prevention fund requires a certain local match. So that is what our contribution is to this program. Are there any questions about this program? Okay, well then let's move on to the Integrated Behavioral Health Services program. And this is kind of one of the ones that's in the mix for realignment based on the needs of people in the criminal justice system. So I'm at this point does anybody have any questions about this program? I think this one is likely to look a lot different after we get to the point where we
I have a question.
Yes.
I would like a better idea what the Community Resource Center is and its involvement in this program. I don't recall ever hearing about that, so I have that question.
Yeah, it's brand new.
I can speak to it. It's a program of Presence, Provena Covenant Medical Center. We, Community Elements, got involved early because we actually had a potential grant from the state of Illinois that would fit well with trying to place people at Community Resource Center. So I will tell you that it opened on the 15th, so a little over a week ago. And what their main goal is, Presence's main goal, is to help people find alternatives to the ED, the emergency department. And so what they're hoping to do is be able to provide the community with an option. And right now what they have is a nurse practitioner there for half days, 4 days a week. They have one of the sisters who's dedicated to it. She's an MSW who provides some supportive services there. And then they have some folks from CRIS, which is the group that really has been helping the Medicare population with a managed care program. And new this week is Catholic Charities has a staff member located there. So Presence has reached out to a number of agencies to have, we call it, maybe Nancy's here too, a Presence at Presence. So if you want to have a Presence at Presence, but I think it was coined by Nancy and I've kind of used it since then. But they're hoping that local agencies could use that to have more of a one-stop shop, help people wrap services, referral and linkage and follow-up. And there are two students right now that will be working at the CRC, and there'll be interns that will be supervised by Community Element staff for the clinical piece, but they are really working to do some of the informatics, the data collection, the analysis of what sorts of needs people have. But it is right now, well, the location is the old cancer center at Pervena. So if you're very familiar with Pervena's campus, as you come around to go to the emergency department, you pass by the cancer center, and the provider at the cancer center left. I think he retired. But that is beautiful space. It has its own entrance. It has its own parking lot, which allows people to make a choice eventually down the road of going to the community resource center instead of the emergency department. And so that began the discussion of how we could also use it in our continuum of care to assist people that might need some support before they get in trouble and maybe end up in the justice system. And so there's also some discussion about whether this would be the location that juveniles could be brought to help with issues related to truancy and maybe assessment, referral, and linkage as well. The nice thing, and this is just, I mean, from my own perspective, but what I've heard is that people like the idea of being somewhere that is already open 24/7 with the goal of trying to move to that so that it would be always available. But they also like the idea of free, which is what basically Presence has offered, free space to agencies to operate out of. The only thing that I think agencies are having trouble with is we don't have enough people and resources now. And so we may find ourselves sort of trying to, you know, deal with some of the capacity issues. Also, do we have enough staff to stretch and place people in the community resource center? And so that's where interns have come into play, and some unique partnerships and a slow buildup. So they're calling it a soft opening, but they are open. And right now they're focusing on how they can help people in the ED who are maybe needing a service but not the ED. And then they are going to focus on people who are multiple, they say recidivists, but if you find yourself going to the ED multiple times, the thought is there something else that we can do to help you not need to be there, you know, twice a week, for example? I think what Nancy and I had talked about is there's still a lack of PCPs available for people, so primary care physicians, and also still capacity issues, having people be actually linked up. So it's a great opportunity, and it's in its infancy.
It seems like it almost is an informal application of the medical home concept, where you have physical medicine as well as psychiatric or psychological support.
Exactly. And when we did the application, we didn't choose to do a 708 application for it. We really did a state application, hoping that we could, you know, supplement and also have the state stake in integrated care. So that's exactly how we modeled the program for the grant with the state, was based on an integrated model.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could comment on that. This is something that the various police departments who have been meeting together, and Community Elements has been a part of that meeting, are going to be looking at. They're going to be meeting with people there in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to attend the meeting because I want to see what's going on. And so I may be able to have some firsthand observation of what it's a setting that's potent. It's got a lot of potential for many things, I think, that in the future. I don't think it's any, you know, we don't know what it is now, but in the it's got potential, especially since not only the mental health folks and the medical people, but actually the police and law enforcement people are somewhat interested in it as well. So it could turn out to be developed into something really interesting for this community.
Okay. Any other questions on this one? Okay. We should go on then. The PLL front end, of course, you all know what PLL is. The front end program is for the kids that are less involved in the criminal justice system or at risk, juvenile justice system thing. Any questions about the PLL contract? I think included in your, you know, you have the, well, actually that's for the back end.
I have a brief question. I noticed that they're requesting a 20% peer support position. Isn't that what it is? Yeah. What would that position entail? What would that person do?
And we just recently were able to fill that position. That position is a young adult, 18, who has graduated from the PLL program. So an actual youth turning an adult who went through the PLL program and understands the PLL program. And they will join the youth at the groups only to provide that youth perspective on how the program benefited them, how they use the skills, and help with that youth linkage and language that is so important.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, well, then the next community elements application is the psychiatric primary care services, and this is a longstanding program. It's a little different this year. This really is to support psychiatric services and provide nursing services, right? Any questions about it? Yes, Astrid.
They are only concerned with Medicare and Medicaid eligible adults. What happens to people who don't have Medicaid, like people coming out of prison with a homeless? Does anyone care for them?
We do. I mean, I think that, you know, the board, our board, I mean, we direct most of our money for people that are not Medicaid eligible. Yes, that is true. And that's why we've been kind of put in the box where we have to look at the non-Medicaid or the unfunded clients. We're hoping that, with the Medicaid expansion, that will make a difference. But I don't know. Sheila, did you want to comment on that?
Our psychiatric services are made up of one full-time psychiatrist and a part-time psychiatrist, and we do accept sliding scale for the psychiatry program that we have. This program that we proposed this year was really specific to Medicaid, Medicare, because we're trying to pilot something that we would like to build capacity in and not be dependent on funding, state funding. So the only way we could do that is to limit this particular program to Medicaid, Medicare, so that we could generate income and increase the hours over time. And so we partnered with Promise Healthcare to place a provider in our facility 1 day a week or 8 hours, 2 days, 4 hours, so that we could begin to see how we could increase capacity by making sure that our provider mix was correct. And the enhanced reimbursement for Medicaid is only available through our local FQHC, and so this was the beginning of that. But this does not take away anything from our psychiatrists and what they're doing right now for people who have Medicaid, self-pay, insurance. The only thing that I can tell you is we continue to have capacity for that group as well. I mean, limits with capacity, I should say, a waiting list. So this doesn't answer it, but as we're moving to the ACA, the only way that we know how is to make sure that we pilot some programs and try and see if we can increase how much we raise through the delivery of service so we can expand how many people we serve that don't have benefits. I can't tell you how long it is. I know there's 188 people on the wait list right now for psychiatry for us. I'm not sure what that would translate into in terms of time.
It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference if you have insurance in this community. community, it takes a couple of months to get in to see a psychiatrist.
So many of the people have nothing. Right. Homeless.
Yes.
Have nothing available, it seems.
Any other questions? Okay, Time Center. This is related to screening for mental illness and substance use disorders. We're also looking at this as one of the ones that one of the contracts that we want to talk about, how that this can assist with the jail population and keeping people out of jail. So there may be some negotiation related to that also. Any questions about Time Center?
As a follow-up to Deborah's question, I noticed you have moral recognition workbooks, and I was wondering what they were about.
They actually follow the 16-week program, and so they're the units that the group will go through, and it becomes the book of the person, which is kind of nice because if you start the group while you're incarcerated, which wouldn't be nice, but you could take the book with you when you go to outpatient. So it's an open group, so you actually can join the group right away. And so that's kind of nice. And I just thought I'd tell you that I looked it up while we were talking. And I want you to know that the question about what recognition is one that apparently a lot of people have because they do say that it is not a dictionary word. That's true. And they say it's an archaic word before ego replaced it. And it's conscious decision-making part of personality. So offenders are in the situation of reevaluating their situation and raising their moral decision-making strategy.
Does it start with
Well, what, and I know, too, that I think it's important to say that the Sheriff's Department has supported us by purchasing MRT groups, but this board has also helped us with that same piece of it because this is just a really good book that would go. And so if this group would like to take a look at the workbook, just, you know, maybe let Pete know and I can get some copies to you because I think it'll sort of be easier to wrap your head around.
Thank you. That's good.
Astrid? Yes, of course.
No, they're voluntary, but their support plan is individualized. And so if this is an issue that they may have, we'd encourage them to be part of that program. And again, you know, the Time Center is not a shelter. It's a transitional living program. So everybody who comes into Time Center has a support plan that's designed to sort of reduce those barriers to self-sufficiency. So we encourage it.
Yes, Tom.
Sheila, this is just strike me. There's a book that goes along with this more, and you give it to these guys, and they carry it with them. Do they actually do that? They don't lose it or anything?
I think because if you see the book, you'll see that it has a lot of personal questions in it. So it's almost like it becomes a very personal thing for people. I mean, they're talking about their morals and how they feel and how they were raised. And so it's like a journal. And I think you see a great sense of ownership and care of it.
Any other questions about Time Center? Okay, then we'll move on to Crisis Nursery. This is the Beyond Blue program for Champaign County, which is a perinatal depression program for women with young children. We fund a portion of that program, $70,000. Yes. Does anybody have any questions? Stephanie Record is here. Who's the I don't think anybody has any questions. Thanks. Okay. Okay. Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County. This is the First Call for Help. This is a combination program. It's First Call for Help, but it's also to help support the our presence, the presence of agencies in Northern Champaign County in Rantoul. Were there any questions about this application? Andy Kay.
Here I go again. I'm interested in the impact that 211 line has over these first call for helps, because as I recall, that's kind of an information response system. And could you talk about that, please?
Yes. I don't know. I think what the plan at this point is if 211 comes on board, it is likely that we will share support for that. For the 211 line, we will work with United Way. We've had conversations with them at this point. We have not seen the contract with the agency that manages 211, which is called PATH, and it's from Bloomington. For those of you who don't know, 211 is essentially just a social services information. You call 211, you tell them what your issues are, and they will direct you to do pretty much the same thing that first call for help was doing. At this point, if that happens, we're going to be working with United Way and make decisions about how to deal with the first call for help programs that we fund. We are the two primary funders of it. My assumption would be that we will reduce funding to the agencies that provide that and try to do it in a gentle, helpful way. But more than likely, as the first call for help program becomes obsolete, I guess, by 211, we'll have to make some changes.
211 will happen. It's happening in other areas of the state, and it's just a question of when PATH in Bloomington is ready to roll it out for Champaign County. It's been talked about happening anytime, may happen as soon as June. About a year ago, they were talking about sometime this spring, but it will happen, and it will certainly, I would imagine, be happening fairly quickly. And when it does, I'm sure there'll be an education campaign that accompanies that.
Mm-hmm. We should mention that, you know, that's a portion of what we fund this program for. You know, a lot of it has to do with the supporting the presence and the case management and the connections that Andy Kay's program makes in Northern Champaign County.
Yeah, I would add that, you know, besides just doing the pure information and referral piece, which what 211 is all about, we do a lot more than that in terms of serving as a satellite site for other agencies from Champaign-Urbana to see people from the Rantoul area without them having to travel. And we do a lot of face-to-face connecting kind of activity to mental health and other human services for people that come in and, for example, use our food pantry or other direct services that we provide.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question. I probably should be able to figure this out, but I'm not sure I can. So you refer a big number of people to services. I wasn't clear how many. Do we know, or do you know, how many of those people actually get some service after they're referred?
No, we've tried to do some follow-up. The problem with information referral when you're talking to somebody on the phone is you don't want to ask too many questions. Some people are not comfortable in giving their name. So follow-up to pure information referral calls is difficult. What we're starting to track is people that come in for our direct services, and if they ask about other services available, we set up a process where we say, you know, here's, let's say Community Elements is the place you probably need. Now, are you okay with us giving you a call in a couple of weeks or a couple of months to find out whether you've actually accessed that service and how it went? So we've done a little bit of that, but just on a pure INR kind of level, it's difficult to do. But we're looking at that as well.
If I could just add real quickly, I'm sure a lot of families service, and we also do first call for help information and referral.
And as staff time allows, which is pretty limited, we do try to make follow-up calls to people who we have previously referred, just to check and see, were you able to connect to the agency that you were referred to? Did you get the help you need? Do you need any additional help? We can only do that for a small sample of the number of people that we refer, but the vast majority of them report that they were able to contact the agency, and for the most part, it was an appropriate referral. They got the assistance that they needed, or if there were issues, we can find out what those are and try to make a follow-up referral. So it's a small sample, but those that we are able to reach do report good success in accessing community services.
And we capture some of that information in our consumer satisfaction survey that we do. We ask, we do about 100, 150 folks that come through our doors. We ask them if they receive other services within our facility besides ours, and whether, you know, they're satisfied with those services. And although it's about a 10, 15% sample, the majority of folks are very glad to have other agencies' services available in our facility. So, yeah, we do that on different levels as well.
Any other questions about this program?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Developmental Services Center, Developmental Training and Employment Services. This is a program that is currently split between the two boards. This board funds a portion of it. This is for different levels of service. We have Dale Morrissey and is here, and Patty is here. Right.
Be happy to answer any questions you may have on our applications.
This is for people who are not funded through Medicaid.
This is an application that you guys have funded, or a program that you guys have funded for a long time. And I guess I wanted to just talk to a little bit about the continuity of services and the array of services that are covered, because this does cover developmental training and employment services combined. We have about just under 300, I think, that were served last fiscal year. And there are people that attend day program only. There are people that receive community employment only. And then there's also kind of a group that falls in the middle, where they actually blend services, to where if they're working part-time in the community or if they have volunteer opportunities in the community, they may also spend part of their time at DSC. That seems to be a level of comfort that sometimes the transition into community employment is very intimidating. Or if they are not successful their first venture out, they have the option to be able to come back to DSC and continue to earn a paycheck. I know there's a lot of debate and across the country, and day program will continue to exist even when sheltered workshops do not. There's a level of care that is necessary, whether that is basic care skills, behavioral medication, medical issues. You know, there's a group of people that are higher skilled than nursing home care, but can use that day program, and it provides families kind of a respite and a sense of comfort as they continue to be employed or work in the, you know, they're working. And so there is a relief and a comfort in that. And I think there is a move with people that are coming out of high school and people that are wanting to go straight into community employment, and we're sensitive to that and able to respond to that. There was a reference earlier, too, about I think Community Choice has mentioned that the DOORS contracts. We also work with DOORS, and what happens with that is there's a referral made. Whether we are referring somebody to DOORS of somebody that is ready for community employment, and there's funding for the initial 90 days of that job, and then they consider that a successful placement. The ongoing support is needed for many people beyond that allotted time. And so the ongoing support is something that we've been able to provide for a number of years. And person-centered planning is a part of that process. We meet with all the consumers and find out what their strengths are, their abilities. We include the families in that for those that have family support. But I wanted to also stress that there are lots and lots of people at DSC that receive services that don't have that family support, and we are the support that they need to be successful in the community, whether that's residentially or through the employment or day programs.
So. And the final thing I'd like to add to that is, many years ago these programs were separate, developmental training and employment services, and there's been some discussions because it's so large. But the key factor that's positive to that is, as Patty was saying earlier, that consumers, based upon their need, can flow easily between the programs. And I like to call it mixed outcomes. It's based upon their person-centered need, and that some of them may be – not everybody falls cleanly in a particular box. Some of them can work at some level but need volunteer opportunities, or can be in the community part of the time, can be in the supported. Even in our developmental training area, there's times that people need very much support, but the contracts we have with the cities and Champaigns, they can be out and working either in the park districts or in other areas, and sometimes then doing part-time community employment. And as was witnessed in the Ebert Fest this weekend, and also in the show, with some of them are their entrepreneurs and doing their own artwork and selling that type of stuff, and so they can fall with any of these gamuts on any particular day that they need that service.
Any questions?
I don't know the answer to this question, so I noticed that about 80% of the clients, if I'm reading it right, a little more than 80% are white. I'm wondering, does that represent the demographics of the target population, or is it not?
You know, on the adult side, it's interesting what we found. I didn't look at the statistics for this year, but we oftentimes find in our children's program that population of non-white is much higher. Is that much, much higher? But for some reason, in years we've looked at that, when it gets to the adult population, it's higher than the general population, as far as numbers are, like the 11 or 12%, but it's still consistently in that area no matter what we do. That's the individuals that present themselves and the individuals that we do our across-the-board search. And we do have linkages with, again, being involved with Project Access and several – excuse me?
Latino Partnership.
And the Latino Partnership is another thing. But the numbers continue to present at that level. On the adult side, but the youth is – the 0-3 program, 0-5 program is always much higher.
Well, either they're being really successful at the with the I don't know. I was thinking maybe it's possible to I don't necessarily want to tell you what to do. I'm just wondering if you're thinking about attending to that obvious sort of thing that doesn't quite fit together.
Absolutely. We've continued, as you said, we've expanded with the outreach program. Tracy mentioned to me a couple of months ago about trying to bridge that gap a little closer, looking at the DD population a little bit more under Project Access. I had a person many years ago, I was sort of shocked. It was at the fundraising of another organization. He happened to be a black gentleman I worked with a long time ago. His assessment, which I don't agree with, this goes to the other, is that oftentimes people got diverted from us, and particularly the higher functioning people might end up going into the correctional system before they got to us. Now, I don't think that's a fair assessment, but I think there is a little bit to that. But that was an assessment that was made when this question was asked, even like I said, over 15 years ago.
Julian, I think this is one of the topics that Chandra is, she's not with us tonight, but she's our person that reviews cultural competence plans and how well agencies are doing in that area. And I think this is one that she will continue to work with this provider on. So
I think Chandra was very complimentary when she came in and worked. She met with Vicky. I think Felicia Guler is the chair of our cultural competence committee, or cultural committee. And I think the outreach efforts are there, and I think that there is globally efforts that can be made on all fronts to not just DSC, but to be more accessible or to be more responsive to those needs and doing, you know, in the children's program, there's typically doctor referrals. There's screenings that are set up in communities that are, you know, kind of in rural areas and in different ways. And that same level doesn't exist as regularly on a larger scale in large community events. So a lot of the referrals come from the schools, from doctors, from different agencies and stuff, and unless they're self-referred, and that is then contingent on whether the families choose to participate or access services.
Okay, any other questions? The next one from Developmental Services Center is the Family Development Center, which is for very young children, that's one that we also co-fund with the Developmental Disability Board. Does anybody have any questions about that? That we funded this for a long time. Okay. Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center. That is a mouthful. Yes, but hi, Deborah. We have funded this program for a long time. Does anybody have any questions about this application?
Pete, I just have a correction. And actually, it was brought to our attention by the agency. The amount of their funding request and what they're currently receiving this year, the numbers are mixed.
Reversed.
Yeah, they need to be reversed. Their request is actually for the 13,204. They're currently receiving 13,000. So.
It's a draft, remember? Any questions? No questions. Okay. Family Advocacy of Champaign County. This is a new application, and it's designed to, the proposal is to build on the Access Initiative and follow kids that are coming out.
Yeah, it's I believe it's intended to be aftercare for youth PLA. Graduating from Parenting with Love and Limits. Grace Mitchell is here. If there's any questions.
I wanted to ask you this. You probably know, where is this located? I mean, not where physically, but is this just a new program that's coming, that's establishing right now? So is it located in some agency, or is it?
Yeah, the proposal is to establish a new program as aftercare for youth coming out, families graduating from Parenting with Love and Limits. And it's a program that would be operated by the Family Advocacy of Champaign County.
That's a relatively new agency in town. I don't know. Grace, would you like to?
The Family Advocacy Center in Champaign County has been in existence for 6 years. We are located on Church Street across from Westside Park in the building where the IRS is located. So,
That's good.
This program is basically a program that will be an extension to Love and Limits, PLL program. The name Youth Extended Services speaks for itself, and the yes means yes, these young people are going to make it. We are hoping that they're going to make it. A variety of services will be provided for that group, along with aftercare. It will be provided for those young people between the ages of 11 and 18 years old. We'll have two separate types of services provided for those young people that are in school and for those families. What we would like to do is work with those young people and young adults once they finish with that program to follow them through to see what they do with themselves as far as employment, schooling, or whatever they need. The S's that we use for sustainability, self-worth, and self-sufficiency, these are the things that we would like to see as the outcomes of what happens with these young people as opposed to going into the criminal justice system. We want to be able to see them make it once they finish with this program. We will follow them through for at least 6 months. If it deals with employment, we will work with them and other agencies and programs in the community to talk about what can they do, what kind of training can they be involved in. If it's school, then we will be working with them to get them in school. We want them to be successful, and that's the outcome that we want for them.
Yes.
I was actually surprised to see this program in here, because I thought that that was part of what we, when we established PLL, that there was this follow-up was supposed to be a part of. And so did we not have it before, or is this just the right
with
time to introduce it, or
just
this kind of follow-up?
Well, I think, you know, the people from that graduate from PLL get follow-up, you know, some follow-up within the PLL program. They do have that... I've forgotten what they call it. Refresh me, my brain is.
They have the opportunity for tune-up sessions well as they'll have follow-up contact made just to see how the family is doing. But if the family is still having issues with, you know, what they dealt with within the, I guess, the family and group sessions, they can contact the therapist and ask for a tune-up.
So this is probably a more extensive kind of follow-up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And more regular.
Right.
Yeah, I believe it's to address other issues that the family may be dealing with that aren't addressed.
I was just surprised to see the new program. Not surprised to see Grace.
Hi.
Grace, I just had one question because I had talked to some folks at one of the PLL graduations one time. So what they were doing was voluntary. So will families be mandated to follow up with your agency, or will it still be they can pick and choose whether they do this?
I think it needs to be more that they need to participate in this program.
Okay, once we finish, then you go
over
to... Okay.
This becomes another piece of what PLL is doing. And I think following up to see what happens, because many times in our agencies and social service and mental health agencies, we lose track of what happens to clients. And we're talking about a population many times that are out there, and we know that they're out there getting into things, not feeling like they're worth anything, and not able to get employment or go to school. These are all wishes and things that people have. And I think we need to address them. And again, Dolores, you know, this comes from my 35 years in education, and I see what happens to many of our young people. And this is an opportunity to follow them and to see what they're doing with their life and to see how they move on in their life as adults.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Family Service of Champaign County. Counseling program. This is a long-standing program. Are there any questions about this application? Cheryl's here, of course. Okay. First call for help. Cheryl, you've already given us some information on that. Any questions? Self-help center from, and this is also Family Service of Champaign County. This is one of the programs we have funded for a long time. Okay. Then we have family, this is also Family Service, the Senior Counseling and Advocacy Program, also a long-standing program. Questions? Thank you, Cheryl. Prairie Center, the drug court contract program. Yeah, Bruce here. We of course have been a long-standing supporter of the drug court and the services. Were there any questions for Bruce about the drug court application?
Peter, similar to the community elements application where there was a question about discrepancies between the budget narrative and the personnel form, there's a similar issue that exists with this application. And we'll address it either if they don't respond to it in writing, we would certainly address it, as you mentioned earlier, during contract negotiation.
Okay. We also have a small contract for mental health court to provide substance use disorder services to people that are involved in mental health court. Any questions about that? Okay. Parenting with Love, this is also Prairie Center, Parenting with Love and Limits, and this is the extended care program, and that's I think you've all seen the report on this program that's also included in your packet. Any questions about this application? Okay, we'll move on. Prairie Center Prevention Program. And this is a program that we've also funded for a very long time. Okay, then moving on, Prairie Center Youth Services. This is a program we started funding last year, and it is also tied in with Access Initiative and is part of our match for the Access Initiative. Any questions about it? Oh, Mark, go ahead.
Bruce, could you just as part of your proposal, you've got a clinical director and a clinical coordinator position that are both vacant. Do you expect to fill those anytime soon, or what's?
You want
to apply? No, I'm not interested in, yes, in applying. Yes. So.
Okay. Moving on. That's it for Prairie Center. Thank you, Bruce. Promise Healthcare. This is our FQHC, our Federally Qualified Health Center, Francis Nelson. This is a new proposal that has to do with wellness. And I believe Nancy is here. She was involved in our conversations about the criminal justice system, and has actually has begun talking to us about how this could be refocused to address wellness issues for people that are involved with the criminal justice system. Tom, yeah. Nancy, could you come over?
Can you explain how you're going to do the wellness initiative?
With the criminal justice system or in general?
Yeah.
The proposal as it was written?
With this proposal.
Francis Nelson has been operating with electronic health records. It'll be 2 years this summer, and it's one of my goals is to get it to work to better serve the patients. Our primary care providers regularly talk about, most of our patients have chronic medical conditions, but the medical providers may also diagnose a mental health condition as well, often depression, anxiety. They can make a referral, but often it doesn't get executed. It just, the patient might not come to the level that the primary care provider will make that referral. To our mental health providers. And so this is a chance. What I want to use is use the software to match people who have a dual diagnosis of a chronic medical condition like diabetes, heart disease, pulmonary disease like asthma, and people who are also diagnosed by their PCP for a mental diagnosis, and to work with those patients to try to improve their medical condition, and so there's measures that are included in the proposal. But doing this through staffing a case manager, the health center for the past year and a half or so didn't have one. And so we would have somebody who uses through referrals from their PCPs, but also using the data to find people who are the most likely targets to be able to make a measurable improvement in their lives. So, we have 7,000 patients, we won't be able to treat everybody. So it's to try to be strategic about where we can have the greatest impact. People with chronic mental illness die decades earlier than people without that, but it's not usually for the reasons people might suspect. It's usually for the chronic medical condition that's not being attended to. And so this is to try to address that.
I have a question which is a little bit tangential, but just I can't help asking. Have you had any conversations with the public health district about this problem, since it might be viewed as a public health problem?
No. About?
Well, just what you're trying to accomplish. I'm wondering if they might also be a partner.
I had not considered that. I can talk to them.
I'm just wondering if that makes
sense. We partner with CUPHD on actually part of it does. When it comes to women, we work with the IBCCP program, breast and cervical cancer screening program, and the Well Woman program. And those are programs where we get funding to reach uninsured women who for preventive screenings that we wouldn't be able to reach otherwise. And we do that in partnership pretty intimately with CUPHD. So there is the potential to talk to them. We work with them on some other more broader public health issues and resources, but I had not talked to them about this proposal.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe I'd just like to comment to our own mental health board for a minute about that I think we might want to consider at some point asking the public health district to collaborate on some of these efforts, which in many communities would be considered public health matters. And rather, you know, we only have we had a lot of proposals and a lot of needs and really limited funds. So I'm not speaking specifically to this program, which I think what your aim is laudable. I'm just mentioning that for our own maybe further consideration at some appropriate time.
Good. Just a response to that, I was at the ACME meeting in Springfield, and we had extensive discussion from the staff about the Affordable Care Act and some of its my own feeling is that we probably have another deinstitutionalization debacle when it comes to implementing, because they have a lot of great ideas, question about staff and question about implementation, et cetera. But I think there is that goal where health becomes the interaction between physical and mental health. So I think it's, at least in theory, it remains to be seen how that gets enacted when the Affordable Care Act gets implemented, but I think it is on the docket.
Thank you, Ernie. Very good point. Okay. Any other questions about this one? We move on to the other. The next one is mental health services at Francis Nelson, which is we provide some staff time for psychiatric consultation as well as counseling. Mm-hmm. This is a longstanding program, and as I said, Nancy's at the table talking with us about the criminal justice interface also, so we appreciate that.
Just the point of I know in the previous setting they had a someone who had, I think, a social worker who was able to speak in Hispanic, or do you still have that person? You still have that capability?
Right. We still have Valerie. She's she got her license, I believe, last fall, and she was and is a yeah. So she's an LCSW and practices full time at the health center. She's a joy. She's excellent at what she does.
Okay. Okay. Oh, one other question, Astrid.
There's a limit on what we can do. They are, if you're an established patient of the health center, most of those patients are getting the services they need. There's not much wait, but there's not a lot of capacity to take on new patients for our psychiatry services. We've got kind of the magic mix right now to meet the need of our patients on the medical side. Sorry.
We actually broached that subject about additional capacity as part of the discussion of the criminal justice issues.
I met with Dr. Durham this morning, and she said that she is at her limit. She cannot take on any more, and she said it would be okay to share that with you, so I will do that.
Thanks for the good news. Okay, thank you very much, Nancy. The next one is Rape Advocacy, Counseling, and Education Services, and this is for Counseling and Crisis Services, and we have funded that program for a couple of years at this point. Were there any questions about this application?
Question.
Yeah. You have a question? Well, I'll let them address it.
Hi. I couldn't hear you.
You don't.
I think it's rape, comma.
No, I'll be honest. When we incorporated the agency, we picked a very long name that confuses people. So you are dead on right there. We used to be Rape Crisis Services before a woman's fund was separated and dissolved, but that's a program descriptor, and we legally couldn't have that be our name anymore. So,
were there any questions?
The only, and I don't know, there's a correction. It looks like we don't serve any adults with our counseling program. It says 6% of our counseling clients children and youth, and 0% were adults. I believe that actually should be 60 and 40 of the funded services. So, yeah.
But, thank you very much. We'll correct.
Yeah. I don't know where the other 94% went. But.
Again, we'll fall back on this as a draft.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Champaign County Regional Planning, this is the access, the court diversion service, which is part of our access match. And this is kind of a longstanding support for that project. Any questions about that? Okay, then we have the, this is funded through QuarterCent. This is also the RPC, Court Diversion Services. And you, the request is for they basically are the front end for the juvenile justice system. Okay, no questions. Darlene, did you want to say anything? Or? Okay. The Juvenile Assessment Center is the third proposal. And any questions about the Juvenile Assessment Center? Let's just see.
Basically,
at this point,
I
should mention that this is the whole discussion about the Juvenile Assessment Center will be take place next week with the QuarterCent administration team. And that group makes recommendations to this board for your consideration. So with that preamble, go ahead.
Right. The third proposal that you see, the first two are repeat proposals that you have funded for several years. The third proposal is it's basically an expansion of the court diversion services for two purposes. One is to expand into evening and night hours to respond to police calls immediately. Currently, if they arrest kids in the night, they wait until the next day to refer them to us, and the police have indicated it would be helpful to have an immediate referral situation. And so that's the first expansion improvement. And the second part of that is that the police were interested in similar to the adult system with the jail and mental health, they are struggling with what to do with status offenders. They arrest the kids for curfew violations or for drinking violations, those kind of things, but they don't really have any, they don't want to take them to the juvenile detention center. They don't, often their parents aren't necessarily home at that moment. They don't really know what to do. They don't have a person to refer them to mental health services or for other interventions, and so they were kind of struggling what to do. And so we offered to expand the intake function to include some assessment about that and refer to appropriate community agencies outside of the juvenile justice system. So that's the connection now, the beginning of the connection with the mental health services for those kids. And there was some there's still discussion ongoing. We made a proposal to operate it from a facility that we have access to that would be free of charge, but there are other locations on the table. So the location has not yet been determined, and it's basically a first step to trying to link the juvenile justice side with the kids that are in between the actual crime things, with because they're status offenses. It's a crime, but it's really only a crime because they're young, and moving them into some other kind of family support kind of referrals. So it would be considered a diversion activity, just like our court diversion is now for the kids with actual criminal offenses, but it also hopefully will keep them out of the criminal system at all and just move them into more of the mental health family support system. So that's the proposal on the table, and it's still a work in progress, as Peter said. There's various partners at the table, so some of those factors are still to be decided.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is the difference between the two programs, the one previous and this, the expansion and mm-hmm. being able to deal with kids who come in after hours mm-hmm. and diversion? And it looks like in the first project there is a a continued sort of meeting with interns or something. You don't do that with the second program. We do.
What we're saying with the current program we offer has several different diversion options, some of which are peer court and victim offender reconciliation, mediation, mm-hmm. and there's a substance abuse online class. Last year we piloted and now have added, would like to add more, something called No Limits for Youth, which is an evidence-based intervention to help kids set goals. And what we have found is that for many of our youth, they're not seeing the connection between criminal behavior at this time and how that might actually impact them able to get a job or something in the future. So we're trying to make that connection for them. And if they would like to pursue certain goals, they may not be able to get into certain professions with a criminal record, et cetera. And so we use the BSW students at the university as one-on-one teachers of that curriculum, which is an 8-week curriculum, so they can work one-on-one with the kids. And that is an ongoing. We just don't have very many kids yet in that program because we don't have a big capacity, but that's growing. And so those pieces are already in place, and basically we're asking for renewal funding for those things in the first application to the Mental Health Board and the first application to the quarter cent fund. That's a combination funding for those activities. The third application is asking for a larger amount of money, and it would increase, it would continue all those activities, but it would increase two staff people for evening and weekend and night hours to be able to respond immediately to the police calls and responses. And the reason we can do that with only two people is some of it would be an on-call basis. There aren't, sometimes there's not as many police calls. And then to expand that, we're figuring at least double the clients that we're seeing because the police are indicating the status offenders are equivalent in number to the number of kids we're seeing now on station adjustment for the criminal activity. So that would double the caseload, basically.
Can I ask? So these kids who are on either station adjustment or status offenders. Can they turn down the program, the offer?
Yes.
To get services?
Yes.
Without penalty?
No. The kids that are placed on station adjustment currently for court diversion have committed an actual crime, usually a misdemeanor crime, might be battery or theft or something like that. So if they do not accept the diversion option and complete it, they will be referred to the state's attorney. The kids that are on status offenses, mm-hmm. currently we're not seeing. Those are not referrals to us currently. So the police are just kind of.
But you're now wanting to see them, right?
What they're saying is they would like for there to be a place that they could also refer those kids, and they would not become part of the juvenile justice system, but the assessment would take place, the tracking would take place the same, but they would be referred instead of to the court diversion options. They would be referred to community services that could help them, their family situation, PLL being one of them.
So can they reject that?
Pardon?
Can they reject that?
They can. Again, they can.
Without penalty?
That would, again, depend. I don't think the police currently are filing charges against status offenders.
Right.
So I think that, yes, they can.
So that's what I'm really asking about is, are you worried about widening the net?
No.
And therefore inadvertently getting more kids involved in the juvenile justice system?
No.
Because many times police will suffice with station adjustments, and the kids, you know, they might do it once or twice and they never have a problem again. So I'm just wondering why isn't that a worry?
My reading of the police is they don't really intend to do that at all. They're not intending. They're looking for something to do with these kids because they're arresting them late at night and they don't want to have to arrest them. And so they would like to be able to basically warn them and release them to a case manager who can do an assessment if they need other services and try to get them connected.
Yeah, I'm just worrying about what happens when they don't want to go have their case managed.
Well, currently they just let it go. I mean, that's what they're doing now.
Yeah.
They're just letting us let it go. So the kids just aren't getting any help or connection. And likely there would still be some of those, you know, as with everything, there's kids that drop out. So in our current court diversion program, there's kids that are referred to us for station adjustments. They say, we're not participating. They get referred back to the state's attorney.
of the kids that participate, there's a certain percentage that don't complete their agreements successfully, and so they get referred back to the state's attorney. And then there's a number of kids that complete all of those things and do well and don't recidivate. In the same circumstance, I think you would find with the kids that are on status offenses, whatever, they would come to us the first time. We would possibly make some referrals. We would follow up to see if they did those referrals. Basically, it's just a way to know whether kids are actually getting connected or not, because we would follow up to see if they made the connection. I don't care if they were. I don't care what they did. If, let's say, they needed to go to Prairie Center, we referred there. I don't care if they what they did at Prairie Center. I'm just going to ask, did you go? Did you make the link? And then Prairie Center will say, you know, yeah, they showed up. We did what we needed to do. We're cool. Or Prairie Center would say, you know, they never came.
If they don't, will you be reporting back to the police that
they
didn't?
There would be a report. There would be a report that says they didn't do that.
That's what I'm thinking out loud about.
Yeah.
Maybe thinking about.
Right. But that's exactly what we're asking of all of the mental health providers in the Access Initiative, is if you refer someone somewhere, do you know that they even get the link?
No, I'm not questioning whether or not it's good for you to know.
Yeah.
I'm questioning whether or not it's good for the police to know.
Well, and that actually hasn't been decided whether that information would go back to the police or not. But I think we would want to do our same process to know whether they made it or not. Whether that information goes back to, I mean, it might not go, but currently the information goes back to the police for the station-adjusted kids because they need a record of whether they are referring that to the state's attorney. But these kids wouldn't be in that situation. So potentially we could not refer, I mean, not individuals. We wouldn't have to say, you know, this individual. We could say, just in general, of the 25 kids that the Champaign Police Department referred last year, 10 of them connected with resources.
Yeah, okay, I think you should think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all.
Sure.
That there should be a feedback loop to the police, that they would like to know what happens. And
well, what I'm suggesting is I don't think the police should know the individual identities of the kids who turned down those services because the police weren't going to pursue them legally anyway. And now this might encourage them to, which I don't think we want to do.
We'll go from a status offender to a station adjustment.
Yeah. So, I mean, because I know these programs happen in other places, and sometimes there's an inadvertent way in which, that's what I meant by widening the net.
Sure.
In which the net of the...
Yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily lead to good things for all kids. So.
Well, I can see the concern. You'd be concerned then that the police would say this kid's noncompliant, and they'd be harder on them the next time they catch him at something. And yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Peter, I have a brief question. I'm sorry, but Darlene, in the court diversion services proposals, community service block grant dollars are only 4%.
Mm-hmm.
But they're increased for the juvenile assessment center.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't there a greater investment in community service block grant dollars in the court diversion services? If you're able to make that investment in the juvenile assessment center, why aren't you making that same level of investment in court diversion?
Well, as you know, the funding's decreasing all the time. We have lots of competing programs. The reason that my board made a conscious decision to invest more was because we belong to the Champaign Coalition and the Access Initiative and other organizations that have wanted to identify this as a goal for this year, to get an assessment center started. That's been an identified goal. And so the Regional Planning Commission said that they would help support that by allocating more funding for that purpose. So that's why. And I don't know if that will be, you know, forever and ever, but they wanted to make that initial commitment to really try to help it get started, knowing that the startup costs would be an issue.
Okay. Any other questions for Darlene? Thank you very much. The Upcenter of Champaign County, this is a new application. It's we are currently funding another program. They're asking for additional dollars to do clinical crisis counseling. And does the board have any questions about this application?
Just my
my ignorance about it. Are they a part of some larger organization, or are they a freestanding group? Or
no, they're a freestanding group. We have someone here from UP.
Hi, the UP Center is the LGBTQ community center in Champaign County, and we're currently in our fourth year. We're a standalone agency.
Thank you.
No problem.
I'd just like to make a comment. I think a couple of years ago, the School of Social Work gave a award for a supervisor who supervised one of their interns at your center, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, and I really think that it speaks to the quality of services provided, because they were in competition with all agencies in which undergraduate social workers were interned. And this agency went out over all the others. So I think that's a testimony of their quality.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions about this one?
I think another thing, I think you uniquely grasp at a situation that for teens in particular in high school. I think we all know that adolescent suicides are often a result of bullying of the gay, lesbian, and bisexual students.
Our current office space is in the Independent Media Center in Urbana. We're currently looking at expanding because we're at capacity in our current space. It's a good problem to have, right?
Okay, the other application is the one we currently fund. This is the Youth and Volunteer Program.
Mm-hmm.
And any questions or comments on that? Okay. Did you want to say anything before?
Do you want to say anything? Yeah. Just thank you. It's been great being a part of the board, and we're looking forward to continuing to expand our program. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We appreciate your work. That really concludes our due diligence. I thank the board for going through this, and I know that we've all looked at the application, so, I mean, this is we had a good opportunity to talk to people. So thank you all for coming tonight, and I'm going to turn it back over to the president.
Thank you, Peter. And I'd also like to thank the agencies for all that good feedback. You know, it's one thing to read about a proposal, but to hear anecdotal reasons for why you did whatever is always helpful in making decisions. So thank you for that. In the interest of time, maybe we could defer a discussion on PLL recidivism study. We're going to do a real good explanation in October, so we could just talk about that later, if that's okay?
That's fine.
And then under old business, you have a copy of our briefing memo about the resolution that we talked about at the last meeting. So is there an interest to talk about this a little bit or not?
Well, at this point, the plan is to present it tonight, and then we'll bring it back in May for approval. The only comment that I had was something that Julian sent. He received a comment from a gentleman whose name is James Kilgore, who suggested that we make reference to advocacy groups and community groups such as NAMI, and that we include them as part of our support system for people in the system. And I think we can do that. We just haven't had a chance to work that up at this point. Were there any other comments, Julian, that you've heard, or Astrid?
No, and I circulated it to the jail committee, and Jim is on that committee, and mm-hmm.
Okay, good enough. So we'll make a decision in May. And then under the Disability Resource Expo, we can defer that for future discussion, but I did want you to just understand that they're moving to a new location, which is a good thing. So it's at the Fluid Events Center on Country Fair Drive, which is the old Huntsman Lumber Company, I believe. Yeah, I think that's way down beyond the Social Security office going north.
It's on the other side of it.
Right.
Dolores, it's on the other side of the tracks.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, but it's right. So anyway, it should be a nice location, and I'm sure it will be just as successful as always. Right. So I don't have any more board announcements, and I need somebody to move and second that.
I'd just like to make one comment. As a result of the materials that was presented at the ACME conference in Springfield, I would think it would be appropriate sometime for us to have a study session to that would give us an idea of what this means, what some of these changes will mean to our board as well as agencies in the community. That's going to be a quantum change, and there's all sorts of implications that we need to have some kind of feeling for as we progress. So that's just a suggestion.
Sounds good, Ernie. Thank you. Anything else?
Make a motion we adjourn.
Okay, it's been moved, second, and we're out of here. Thank you for coming.
You didn't make a comment about the number of African Americans in the juvenile justice system. Maybe what we should do is see if we can equal the number, reduce that number to the number in the development of disabilities.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. In the jail, a lot of those